Welcome, everybody. Let's get started, shall we? Without further ado. So very nice to see you all. Thank you for coming through the lovely summer weather that we're having. It's nice to see you all. So as Karen Varpy said, the topic for this evening and for a further three evenings afterwards is the worldly winds. So I'm going to introduce that topic this evening. So the worldly winds, and it's a topic I quite like the worldly winds myself, or at least as a topic I like the worldly winds anyway, and I think that partly relates to my name really. So I have felt some sort of I've been very interested for many years before I was a Buddhist in some of these explorers, particularly those guys from the golden age of exploration, people like Columbus and Magellan, and incredibly brave people to, despite their many faults as well, but to go off and sail off into completely into the unknown. So quite heroic. And so there's a strong mythic connection, I feel. You know, it's sort of, there's a myth there of the spiritual life to a certain extent, this sort of journeying into the unknown. So I've felt that connection with these guys for a while, and of course these guys had to rely on the wind, the actual worldly winds, the meteorological worldly winds, for to get them from A to B. You know, they just sailed in sail ships, obviously, so they relied on that. And where the connection comes in is that obviously back in those days they didn't have sat nav or anything like that. In fact, they didn't even have maps, of course. So you might have seen that episode of Blackadder, when Blackadder's going off on an exploration, and Melchett says to him, the foremost cartographers of the day have prepared this map for you to take with you. And Blackadder, oh, thanks. And he gives him a blank sheet of paper. And if you could fill it in as you go along, that would be very helpful. So it's a bit like that. So they did, you know, they didn't have any maps. So they used to have to navigate by the stars to a large extent. And they didn't even have proper compasses in those days. So they were really skillful navigators, quite incredible. So they used to have to navigate by the stars. And the connection with my name is that Taranita means guided by Tara, but Tara also means star. So my name can also be translated as guided by a star, which Vasantra gave to me because of that connection with these explorers. So these Columbus and Magellan and so on had to very skillfully sail the worldly winds. And so we too, if we want to reach our own new world, our own undiscovered country, must also skillfully sail the worldly winds that we face. So let's have a look at what the worldly winds actually are. So there are eight in number, and they come as a set of four pairs of worldly winds. And they have, each pair has a, what you might regard as a positive effect, a positive characteristic. And then its opposite, which is sort of negative. So one's kind of desirable, generally speaking, and one's what we might regard as undesirable, generally speaking. So first of all, then, the first pair is quite simply gain and loss. So we win £50 in the National Lottery, for example, or we find a book we've been looking for in a second-hand bookshop. We gain something. On the other hand, we might lose something. Our watch might break, or like a famous footballer recently did, we might lose £500,000 in a casino in 2 hours. So, of course, we've all done it, haven't we? So. Imagine how that must have felt. Anyway, we gain things and we lose things. So let's move on to the next pair, which is... Now, it's normally translated as praise and blame. But I'm going to use the translation praise and criticism. So it might not flow quite so well, but it does explain what we're getting at a bit better, I think. I'll put the more usual translation in brackets. But you can see what we're getting at here with praise and criticism. So you get praised for something. Oh, you know, isn't your hair lovely? And on the other hand, you get criticism, you know.
You're going grey.
You're going grey, yeah, what a terrible talk, you know, that sort of thing. So opposite poles of the similar kind of thing, praise and criticism. The third pair is normally translated as fame and infamy. But I don't like that translation very much either, because fame, I don't think, is a particularly necessarily a desirable quality. I know some people love the idea of fame and they go on, you know, Big Brother and programs like that because they want to be famous. But I think it'd be terrible. You know, wandering around Tesco's, people trying to get selfies taken with you, be awful. So that term doesn't work for me. And infamy as well. Infamy is not a word we use much these days, is it? Infamy. And it makes me think of Kenneth Williams. You know, I feel, infamy, infamy, they've all got an infamy. Carry on Cleo, I think it was. So I'm going to use the translation instead. Respect and disgrace. But I'll put the usual in brackets. So, fame and infamy. So this relates to how we're regarded, particularly how we're, what our status is within a group of people. So, whether we're looked up to, respected, or not. Whether we don't have much respect, whether perhaps we're in disgrace. So this could be amongst a group of friends, it could be amongst work colleagues, it could be amongst family, it could be amongst Sangha. So how we see ourselves related to the group. So obviously, with all of these, we'll look into these in a bit more detail later. And then finally, we have pleasure and pain. So physical pleasure and pain, the sensations of the body. So we have an ice cream cake, very pleasurable, and then we step on the Lego, very unpleasant, very painful. So those are our eight worldly winds. And they come to us from the time of the Buddha, from the Pali Canon, the word of the Buddha that's came down to us from the time of the Buddha. In particular, it comes from the Lokavipatthi Sutta, which is can be translated as the discourse of the failings of the world, where the Buddha tells us about the eight worldly winds. He refers to them as the Lokadharmas, which is translated as something like worldly conditions. So worldly winds is not a literal translation, it's more of a poetic translation from what the Buddha actually spoke of. But I think it's a very good poetic translation. It relates quite well because, like the actual worldly winds, the dharmic worldly winds can be quite gentle sometimes, it could be quite still, or they can blow like a hurricane sometimes and be overwhelming, even the supposedly desirable ones. And sometimes they can blow in a helpful direction and sometimes in an unhelpful direction as well. So I think it's a good analogy, the worldly winds. And when we're talking about the worldly winds, we're talking about the things that act upon us, the agents that act upon us from the world. They impinge upon us. And for the most part, they're quite obvious, really, and apparent. There's not, for the most part, a great deal of subtlety about them. So if you gain something or you lose something, you know, it's quite immediately apparent that that's happened, generally speaking. Similarly, somebody praises you or criticizes you, you know, it's fairly obvious. The one that's a bit more subtle, a bit more nuanced, is the status one, I think. I think this one's quite particularly interesting, really, and I'm looking forward to exploring this in a bit more detail. And then, of course, pleasure and pain, again, very obvious and immediately apparent. From the dharmic point of view, from the practice point of view, it's our response to them or our reaction to them that interests us, really. How do we respond? How do we react in the face of the worldly winds? To what extent are we blown about by these worldly winds? And the worldly winds are, of course, impermanent. They're transient. They come and they go, just like the actual winds. So we gain something. It's the act of a moment. We realise that we've just won £50 in the National Lottery, and that moment then passes. Now, the consequences of that may last, and our responses and reactions to it may last for some time, even years perhaps. But the thing itself is transient. Same with praise and criticism, you know, it's the act of a few moments, generally speaking. Our status, now that's of course very transient, it ebbs and it flows. Our stock can rise and it can fall. And we see that, of course, with, most obviously perhaps, with celebrities. We're very much in the public eye. We seem to like to build up celebrities and then to bring them back down again. So, for example, Ian Botham may be somebody that you're familiar with. He was a hero in the early 80s. He's a cricketer, for those of you who are not interested in sports. And was quite an incredible cricketer in the early 80s, to the extent that one series of matches was called the Botham Ashes. Because he didn't win it single-handedly, but he was extremely important in winning them. And he was a national hero in this country. Then a bit later, there were some scandals that came out, allegations of drug taking, allegations of extramarital affairs, dishonesty, and the papers laid into him. And so his stock fell and he became unpopular. And then time moved on again, and he became popular again. He did lots of charity things. You might remember going over the Alps with elephants or something. And he got knighted. He's now Sir Ian Botham. And he even advertised shredded wheat. So what could be more wholesome than that? So again, it's very transient, this our status. And similarly, pleasure and pain. Of course, pleasure and pain comes and it goes, and even chronic pain ebbs and flows over a period of time, so it changes. So the transient. The Buddha pointed out that the worldly winds affect the wise person and the foolish person. So even the Buddha would have stepped on the piece of Lego at some point. Not literally, perhaps, but metaphorically. And you can imagine the bhikkhus in the bikinis of the day out with on their arms around with their bowls, and they just used to come and wait at the threshold of a house in the hope of getting some food, some alms. And when they're doing so, they might well have stepped on a pointy child's toy at the time. And so they had an opportunity then to react in a number of ways. They could have jumped about screaming and shouting, or they could have reacted with more equanimity. So it affects all sorts of people. And of course, it affects us throughout our lives. From the moment we're born to the moment we're died, we are in the midst of the worldly winds. So I've got a little exercise now. So if you'd like to get into a comfy position, we're just going to do a short guided reflection. So if you'd like to just get into a comfortable position, close your eyes if you wish to do so. And just take a couple of minutes, or just take a few moments actually, to think of something that used to belong to you, but now does not. So something that got lost, went away, was taken away, was something that broke. Something that used to belong to you, but now does not. So just see if you can bring something to mind. How did you feel about it when you had it? Thank you. So taking yourself back to that time when you were in possession of the thing, how did you feel about it at the time? And now take a moment or two to think, how did you feel when you lost it? So when you became aware of that loss, what emotions did it engender? How do you feel about it now? When it first came to mind, when you bring it to mind now, what response do you have? Was it ever really yours? So when I was preparing for these series of talks, I was trying to think which is my favourite of the worldly winds, which is my favourite pair. That's to say, which did I think I was most affected by? Because certainly gain and loss are certain things that I feel very close to, very much are mine, and don't like the thought of losing them. And one aspires to be equanimous in the face of praise and criticism, it is challenging sometimes. Respect and disgrace. As I said, this one interests me particularly, I think, because I've got a feeling that it is more prevalent than perhaps we might imagine. So anyway, we'll perhaps find out. But I think that idea of, you know, for the want of a better word, sort of pecking order, it's a bit of a cumbersome term, but you know, where we sit amongst things and how we relate to other people based upon that invisible hierarchy is very interesting. And of course, pleasure and pain, you know, it's very powerful motivators for all of us. So I'm not sure I've got a favourite, really. I think I'm affected affected by them all. So, say, hopefully it'll be interesting to explore these and see what your experiences are as well. The Buddha said that an insight into these transient states is a path to liberation. And one reason for that might be because the worldly winds tend to challenge our sense of self, this idea of a self that we have, an idea of a relatively fixed, relatively independent, relatively substantial self. And the worldly winds tend to challenge those. So that when we lose something, something that belongs to us, we tend to think of as almost a part of ourselves. So it can be very personal to lose something. Similarly, when somebody criticizes us harshly, you know, that can really feel like we're a personal attack. And then respect and disgrace, if we feel that people look down on us or don't give us the respect that we feel we deserve, that can feel very challenging as well. And of course, pleasure and pain are very immediate and apparent sensations. So these can all attack, really, serve to undermine the idea that we have, that we try to keep steady, of a relatively fixed, isolated, independent self. Which is why one of the reasons why they're such a good practice. There's lots of ways that we can work with these worldly winds, with our responses to the worldly winds, to help us with our practice. And because they are working against our sense of self, this erroneous, from a Buddhist point of view, sense of a fixed self, working with the worldly winds is an insight practice. Help us to gain insight into the nature of ourselves and the way things really are. I like to consider why it is that these worldly winds cause such a powerful response in us, or reaction sometimes. And it's in part because of our evolutionary heritage. Our responses that we have, our default responses, seem to have served us well, presumably, over the last few million years in terms of surviving and reproducing, because after all, we're here now, aren't we? So we've successfully done that, or our ancestors have. But that doesn't mean it's any good for happiness or gaining insight. We can see that this is the case because that animals often have very similar responses to our default responses to the worldly winds. So if, for example, if we take a dog is very clear on its things that belong to it. So it's got a very clear idea of what belongs to it. They have their own toys, and some of them have their own soft, cuddly toys that they take to bed with them. And if they're eating their food, they're very clear that that's their food, and you shouldn't try to take it off them. It's one of the things we used to tell the kids and tell the grandchildren: don't play with the dog when it's eating his food. They don't like it. So they're very clear on the sense of what's theirs, and they don't like to lose things, but they do like to get things. They do like to gain things. And similarly, dogs react very strongly to praise and criticism. When you're training a dog, again, you'll say, "Oh, the clever dog, isn't he good? Isn't he wonderful?" Because that's the way they, you know, you train them. They like that sort of feedback. And they don't like being told off. You know, the expression "tail between his legs" is because, you know, that's what dogs do, don't they, when they're told off. They're very clear as well on the idea of status, where they stand in the, what they think of as the pack amongst their peers, you know, who they look down on and who they look up to, who they respect and who they don't respect. And of course, you know, like all animals, they respond to pleasure and pain similarly to we do. So it's not perhaps very edifying to realise that our default responses to the worldly winds is basically the same as that of a domestic animal. Except for the cat, of course, because cats really aren't that bothered. They don't care about status too much, aren't too worried about praise and criticism, which does add fuel to my disagreement on a technical dharmic matter with my friend and fellow order member, Dharman. Dahlman argues that cats have a very low spiritual attainment, and he bases this argument principally Buddhist texts, traditional Buddhist texts, that tell us that when the Buddha died at the time of the Parinirvana, the cat was the only creature that didn't cry. Now, that is the tradition, but of course that's not literal truth, is it? Because animals generally don't cry anyway. And in any case, I think it shows that the cat actually had high spiritual attainment, because it saw through the nature of permanence. It realised that, you know, the Buddha would die at some point. It knew that things couldn't last forever, things were insubstantial, so cats, like the arahants, didn't cry. And so similarly, I think this argues that, this adds weight to my argument that they've got quite high spiritual attainment, that they're not just lazy and laze around, sleep all day, they're actually reflecting on the nature of impermanence. Anyway, let's not get sidetracked with the spiritual attainments of cats. Let's move on. So where were we? So the worldly winds, and there's a lot we can explore with the worldly winds. We can also look at them through the other end of the telescope, as it were. So we can think of the worldly winds in terms of when we're the agents of gain and loss for other people, when we praise people or criticize people, you know, how skillfully may we do that, and how are people receiving that? Again, you know, how do we react to other people? Do we tend to look down on people? Do we tend to look up to people? Do we give people deference, perhaps? And as well, when we're the agents of pleasure and pain as well, being mindful of that. So those are the sorts of things we'll be looking at over the next few weeks. Next week, I want to focus in particular on these first two pairs. And then week three, I'll be looking at, we'll be looking at, pairs number three and four. And then week four, we'll hopefully bring it all together and come to some sort of conclusions. And during the course of this time, I've come up with an antidote for the worldly winds. What could be, maybe, a useful approach to adopt in the face of gain and loss. And then another antidote for praise and criticism. So an antidote for each of those. So it'd be interesting just to look at those. And also a false antidote. So an approach that we might think would be useful, but may not be. So again, I'll be interested to hear what you think about that. So those worldly winds, as I say, they act upon us all the time to a greater or lesser extent, most of the time quite gently, but sometimes very, very strongly, as you'll be aware. And our responses to them go in a large way to make up the sort of person that we are, how other people perceive us, and how we impinge upon the universe in general by our responses to what happens around us. So I'm just going to finish with a few lines from Sangharakshita, the founder of our movement, on that topic. A very great part of one's life is probably made up of habitual karmas, things we do over and over again, often without realizing the effect they're having on us. The action may not amount to very much. It may not take up much time. But if we do it every day, perhaps several times a day, it has its effect, like drops of water wearing away a stone. All the time, we're creating new karma, either forging a sort of chain that binds us, or planting seeds of future growth. Thank you for listening.